Welcome to A Dose of the Healthy Truth podcast with Dr. Cecil Bennett. Learn more about this podcast and other episodes at cecilbennettmd.com. Now here's Dr. Bennett.
Hello and welcome to another episode of A Dose of the Healthy Truth podcast with Dr. Cecil Bennett. I'm really excited to be with you. I've often looked at doing podcasts, but you know, life gets in the way and you get busy. But then I realized this is something I really want to do because I really believe I can help you out there with some of your issues when it comes to healthcare, from a mental standpoint, from a physical standpoint, and also from a spiritual standpoint. You know, I tell my patients all the time that we are individuals. We're not robots. We'll have good days. We'll have bad days. We'll have good months and bad months, good years and bad years. Unfortunately, 2020 was a pretty bad year for most people. We lost loved ones. We lost friends, acquaintances. Some of us got sick, but we recovered from that. Life and health is a journey down a river with a very strong current. And it's going to move on no matter what we do. We're going to get older no matter what we do. And there'll be obstacles in that river. Rocks that hit us out of nowhere, like sudden illness or unemployment. Branches that may restrain us that we have to break free of, such as bad relationships or habits or addictions. Some of us refuse and we want to fight and try and swim upstream. Eventually, though, we tire out and we just go right down with the current, a little bit more battered and bruised. The key to a healthier life is not to fight against the current. It is to use the current to our advantage, foreseeing the rocks and the branches downstream. Now, how do we do this? There's a phrase that we're all familiar with that says, knowledge is power. The more you know about your mind and body, the greater the opportunity to be healthier. Doing this, though, requires energy, right? You have to invest the time, you have to read, you have to study. And, you know, if you're like me, you're busy. You just don't have the time to invest. So let me help you with that. Listen to my regular podcast and let me help you build your medical knowledge. My patients often tell me I listen to them. And this is a new experience for them, which is kind of strange to me. I am their doctor. You would think that their previous doctors would listen to them, but that's really not the case. And I find that to be very sad. But why do I listen? You know, I grew up in a very rural background, I can say, very limited background. I decided to become a doctor because of a situation that happened to my father. You know, my father was born back in the 1930s, and he was what I call a basic guy. He left school in the third grade, believe it or not, for his first job, and migrated with my mother from Jamaica in the early 1960s. He tried to study to take the plumber's exam, but could never pass it. He had a third grade education. So even though he knew everything about plumbing, the best he could be is a plumber's assistant. So someone else worked, they got paid, and then he got a portion of the money. That's just the way things were. I mean, he couldn't do any better, but he was the kind of person that went to work every day. I mean, he got up in the morning, went to work, and came home. You know, it's interesting. I remember meeting one of his plumber managers, a guy of the name of Joey LaMotta. Now, you might remember that name because years ago, Robert De Niro made a movie called Raging Bull about Jake LaMotta, and Joey was his brother. And Joey was a plumber, and my father worked for Joey. So that's just an interesting side note that I like to mention. But, you know, as the years went on, when my father was in his early 50s, he got sick. And what did he do? He just kept going to work every day. Until the point that his supervisor said, you know, Benny, you can't keep doing this. We're going to have to send you to the hospital. And he went to the hospital and he was admitted. And it turned out that he had some plaque buildup on one of the valves of his heart. So our heart has various valves that pump blood, you know, through the body. And there was a growth, or think of a little plaque on one of the valves. And they tried to treat it when he was in the hospital, but it wasn't the antibiotics were not working. And my uncles were with him at the time. This was up in New York, and I was living in South Carolina at the time. And my uncles were basic people, too, with basic education. They didn't understand a lot of things. And one of the doctors came to them and said, you know, we've got to move Mr. Bennett to another hospital because that plaque is not shrinking, and there's a risk it may break off, leave the mitral valve, and embolize to the brain, and he could possibly have a cerebral infarct or something along those lines. Now, my uncles had no idea what they were talking about, what this doctor was talking about. I mean, they were, again, as I said before, just basic people. And, you know, they said, you know something, we want to get him to the best hospital that we can get him to. And that was NYU Hospital at the time. And the doctor said, well, no, I think with all the stuff that's going on with his heart, remember, it may embolize. And, you know, he could end up with a stroke or something. And my uncle said, you know, okay, we'll just wait one day. And the one day that they waited to try and get him into NYU was the day that he did have the stroke. And what happened was that plaque broke off from his heart valve and it went into his artery, into the main artery of his body, which is aorta, and went up to his brain, and he had a massive stroke. A stroke that killed him within 2 weeks. So why do I tell you this story? Well, we have to listen to our patients, and we have to listen to our patient's family. If that doctor had taken the time to fully explain to my uncles what the true risks were and that my father had to be transferred immediately, there's a good chance my father would still be with me. I mentioned earlier about listening to our patients and their families. I have found it's not just what patients say, it's what they don't say. I look at their body language and their facial expressions. If I change around their meds, I write it down and I review it with them right there in the office. If they don't understand their diagnosis, I write it down. We discuss it there in the office, and then I tell them to go home and Google it further if they still have other questions or to call back the office. If a patient does not understand what is wrong with them or why they're taking certain medications, then really, what is the point? What am I really doing? I really ask patients to take control of their own lives, to understand their own conditions, and to understand what medicines they're taking. It makes for better patients overall. And gives them better control of their life. I've always made it a point that when I see my patients, I listen to them. And so we talk about the 3 G's, as I call them, guns, government, and God. And I find that the more I listen to my patients is the better that I'm able to treat my patients. In 2003, I bought a well-established practice in Peachtree City. That was interesting. Peachtree City is a beautiful community. As a matter of fact, it is a well-acclaimed golf course community. If you Google golf course communities, United States of America, Peachtree City will show up in the top 3. Peachtree City is also very, very, very conservative. I remember one day I was walking through my parking lot and I saw a bumper sticker that said Obama on it. I was like, wow, I actually have a Obama supporter in my practice. And as I walked up, and I looked at the bumper sticker closer, it said Obama, O-B-A-M-A, and it read, one big ass mistake for America. Then I was reminded I'm in Peachtree City. About 25% of the patients that were in the original practice left before they even met me. But most of them stayed and got a chance to know me. And it was also interesting that, you know, as I got to know my patients better, you know, we would talk about different things, and then they would whisper to me, I just want you to know that I'm a Democrat. I don't want to say that out loud, though, because we're in Peachtree City. And we would laugh about that. But again, patients saw that I was competent, thorough, and conversational. Our conversations went from superficial talk to talking about each other's family, to talking about God, then talking about guns, and then talking about government. I don't shy away from those topics. That's who we are, I mean, we are in the South after all. There are times, too, when, you know, it's called for me to actually pray with my patients about certain issues. And at times when my patients actually pray for me. I remember two patients in particular. There was one gentleman. He was a senior, and he did not have a good diagnosis. He had metastatic cancer in multiple organs. But he always had a very, very positive attitude every time I saw him. It was absolutely amazing. And one day he came into the practice, and, you know, I had a whole lot of things on my mind. And he said, you know, what's going on, doc? And I kind of told him what was going on. And I said, you know, when you go home, you know, Mr. We just call him Mr. Brown, just say a prayer for me. And he said, you know, why do I need to go home to do that? Let's do it right now. And I was just amazed that here was an individual who pretty much did not have much longer to live. He would pass away in the next 6 weeks, but he still took the time to pray for someone else. So we talk about God in my practice. We also talk about guns. Again, we are in the South. And for many people in my practice, a gun is no more than a fishing pole. It's a tool that's used for hunting. But I grew up in Brooklyn, and my perspective on weapons is a little bit different, because in Brooklyn, guns are not used as a tool such as a fishing pole. They're used for hunting, correct, but not hunting, let's say, four-legged beasts, more like two-legged beasts, especially in the neighborhoods that I grew up in Brooklyn. So I discussed that with my patients as well, and we discussed each other's perspective. And, you know, that's how we learn to respect one another. Now, it's amazing how the reaction when you look at, you know, guns in general, when people see guns. I know when I was up in New York, if I saw a gun, I would run in the other direction because you just didn't see one. I mean, it was considered to be the most dangerous thing to even look at a gun. And you come down south and guns are everywhere. I was hosting a group of educators from the UK once, and I've got some property here in Georgia. So we went out there and I had a little surprise for them. I had a friend of mine pull up in his pickup truck, and he let down the tailgate, and there in the back of his truck were several varieties of weapons. Let's just call it that, from handguns to shotguns to everything else in between. And these folks in the UK were absolutely terrorized. They had never seen a gun in their life. These are individuals in their 40s and 50s. They've never seen a real gun. And to see so many in one place, they were just overwhelmed with the sight. We gave them opportunity to actually pick it up, pick them up, understand a little bit about gun safety, fire a few rounds downrange, and eventually they calmed down. But it was amazing their reaction. And it's just indicative of where we are in this country, depending on where you live and your reaction to firearms. We also talk about government in my practice. And through the years, since I've been with my patients, we've gone through Bush, Obama, Trump, and now Biden together. We built a relationship of trust, a relationship of honesty. There's been a lot that has changed over the years in medicine. You know, we're more technological now. We're using electronic health records. And, you know, it seems at times we're not even looking at our patients anymore. We're just sitting there steadily typing. But I try to still stay close to my patients, and we have regular conversations, and I try and type later if I can help it. The title of this podcast is It's About You. And just like it's about my patients, I want this, my podcast, to be about you, to talk to you. So every time I do these talks, I'm thinking about you and what I believe you really need to hear. I'm going to strive to build a very solid relationship with you, a trusting relationship. With that said, I'm not going to sugarcoat anything, though. I don't sugarcoat things with my patients. I'm not going to do it with you. I'm going to always tell you the truth, not any of the spin. So, you know, there may be times that we will be discussing various topics such as weight management, and I'll say something you like you can actually lose weight and keep it off if you do ABC. But some of the times I'll say things you don't like. For example, when we talk about weight management and I let you know that your only shot at really keeping the weight off is significant bariatric surgery or weight loss surgery. You probably don't want to hear that, but I'm going to be honest with you. I don't want you to lie to yourself. You have to be honest. I'll be honest with you, and you have to be honest with yourself. So let's develop some honesty and some confidence together. Let's start by figuring out who you are. I'm going to ask you a series of questions to identify your persona and personality. Two things you need to know. There is your perception of who you are and everyone else's perception of who you are. Your perception is your reality, and their perception of who you are is their reality. Whether you need to change your own perception or change how others view you, that will be up to you to decide over time. I can make the argument both ways. I can say, be you. If others don't like that, well, forget about them. Just be you. I can also say, well, maybe you need to change some things about yourself because some characteristics of your persona may be destructive. For example, we live in a world of not just perception, but position, right? If you are a sarcastic jerk with an explosive anger management problem, but you're worth $1 billion, suddenly that's okay with the world. You're just eccentric. On the other hand, if you're a sarcastic jerk with issues of anger and you're the receptionist for a customer service firm, that may be a problem. So it's not just about your persona in life, but unfortunately about your position as well. That's just the society that we live in, unfortunately. Let's do two exercises to discover who you really are. First, I'm going to ask you a series of questions. The first thought will be who you really are. You're going to have a first thought, and then you're going to start reasoning to yourself, but that's too late. Your first thought really identifies who you really are. Okay, ready? Are you strong or weak? Are you a leader or a follower? Are you passive or aggressive? Are you a taker or a giver? Do you perceive yourself as being superior or inferior? Good. You should have a good idea now of your perspective of you. There's no right or wrong answer, and the first thing that popped into your head is more likely who you really are. And again, there's no right or wrong answer. Now, does your perception match how others perceive you? Again, there's no right or wrong answer. Based on your position in this world, your social-facing persona may not match your true persona, but that's okay. We will be talking about your true persona in these podcasts. We are all important and have value. Society tends to elevate one group and ignore the other, unfortunately, until the other group is needed. For example, you know, I recently read in the paper where a baseball player signed a contract for $250 million, $250 million. Compare that to the salary of a plumber, or like my father, who was a plumber's assistant in the 1970s and 80s. He was making $100 a day. I did the math, and my father was making $100 a day, and this baseball player signed a contract that made him $100 every 30 seconds. Think about that. Again, different perceptions and different positions in society based on hitting a baseball versus handling a plunger. But what happens if that baseball player who has a $10 million mansion that has a fantastic game room all of a sudden experiences a major water heater malfunction where water is now filling up his basement? How important is hitting the baseball in that situation, and how important will a plumber be at that time? Again, position at the time of need. What about how we elevate actors or actresses or singers? Compare them to teachers. You know, teachers will spend an average of 10,000 hours with our kids through high school. 10,000 hours with our children. How important is that to us? Yet they are overworked, underpaid, and given limited resources for success. But I know how to solve that problem. I know what we need to do to get all teachers in this country fully paid and get resources in every school system in this country. It's very, very easy. Are you ready what the solution is? Allow children, when they graduate from kindergarten, to vote. That is my solution. I mean, when I graduated from kindergarten, I knew my numbers. I knew my colors. I can color between the lines. I knew my alphabet. So why should I not be able to vote? I mean, after all, half of the elected officials in Washington, D.C. act like six-year-olds anyway. Now, which half that is? That all depends on perspective, right, and position. If six-year-olds were able to vote, I guarantee you our school system would be much different than it is today. But I digress. The bottom line is that we need to appreciate each other's profession, from bus drivers to social workers or maintenance workers. Because as we can see in this pandemic, we don't need them until we need them. So that was the first exercise, identifying who you are. Now, exercise number two. This may sound a little kooky, but go along with me. What affects or determines your glow? Like what? Glow? What do you mean by glow? You know, Chinese use the term qi to describe the energy that runs through your bodies, providing us with circulation, nutrients, and minerals that we need to be whole. But I'm not a fan of that term qi because you can't really measure what qi really is, right? When you wake up, what's your qi? When you go to bed, what's your qi? How do you measure that? I prefer to use the term glow. And why do I use that term glow? Let me explain. I think that each of us have a light inside of us that glows on a daily basis. Some days it's brighter than others. The form of that light is different for each person. For some, it may be a lamp with three different levels of illumination. For others, it's warm sunlight that may be very bright one day and very warm, or cloud covered another day. For others, it may just be a plain light bulb. You know, for old timers, it may be an old fashioned lamp with a little wick that can be turned up and down. For me, this is going to be funny, but it's a Bunsen burner. Every day I see a little Bunsen burner burning in my head with a nice blue flame that kind of tells me how my day, or at least gives me a perception of how I'm feeling at that time. So you pretty much get the idea. So as you're listening to this, most of you should have something popping into your head now, some type of light that reflects who you are and what your glow is. Now, why do I use that term glow? And why do I want to go down that road and not go down a number road of you know, how do you feel today from 1 through 10? I mean, what does that really mean? There's no way to objectively measure that during the day, realistically. And again, we talked about qi. But light is something that affects us every day. Light reflects mood. And if we see our personality as this glow that's inside us, then we can better understand what affects that glow and what will make us feel better and what makes us feel worse. Once you know what your daily glow is, in upcoming podcasts, we're going to explore what are the things that affect your glow, positively and negatively. Things like relationships at home or at school or at work. Things like employment, your employment environment, your coworkers, friends, your health, stress points. Once again, I'm going to push you to be honest with yourself. Are you ready? Now that's a dose of the healthy truth. Join us next time.
Thanks for joining us for A Dose of the Healthy Truth podcast with Dr. Cecil Bennett. Learn more about this podcast and other episodes at cecilbennettmd.com. The views expressed on this podcast are opinion only and not meant to be taken as medical advice.